Hello, I'm Lauren. I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date is September 11th, 2015. I have a sponsor. She is a sponsor who also has a sponsor. And I was like, I'm gonna give a little history first. I thought I would do that. I come from a family of alcoholics. Can everyone hear me? It sounds weird to me. Okay. my whole family, I come from a family of alcoholics, and it's just like generations back. How my parents met is, which I only found out sort of recently, is like really white trashy, even though we live on the Upper East Side. But basically, my mom was my dad's first wife's brother's high school girlfriend. I don't even understand. She was like a friend of the family. She was like a friend of the family, and basically my mom and my sister's mom from my dad's first marriage are like second-generation career waitresses, and my dad owned a restaurant. So my dad's first wife is the one who got my job, my mom's the job in his restaurant, and she's 15 years younger than him, and that's how it started. I always just thought they met in the restaurant, but then it's like a little more incestuous than that. And so she was his waitress. My brother was born during my dad's like divorce, which was this really long process. They got married once, like I remember being at their wedding, and my dad was totally absent because he had built his whole job around, you know, being able to like sustain his alcoholism. So I was like raised by my mom and my grandma, and it all seemed normal to me, like everything in my childhood. Like I really grew up thinking that other people must be having the same experiences at home. My mom used to say expressions like, you never know what happens behind closed doors, like you never really know what's going on, like, you know, what happens at home kind of stays at home. It's not Vegas, it was just a weird house, and I really did not think it was that different until I went to college. And I knew my dad was an alcoholic. I hated him. I was scared of him for most of my childhood. It was just like really uncomfortable. We were estranged from his first family. I never knew. My half-sisters would come over on weekends until I was like four, and then we just never saw them again. My brother and I, the first time we ever saw drugs was finding my dad's pot stash, and like we cried together. And all through high school, I was really focused on school, and like all through school, really, I just saw like I need to work really hard, get good grades, get some kind of financial aid into a college that I feel good about, and like, you know, that was like my ticket out. So I was really focused, and I didn't really even drink or do anything in high school, partly because I judged my dad so much for it, and I really did not want to be like him. And my mom is like classic codependent, like Al-Anon, and she actually got sober when she was 23 too, but like wasn't really active in the program. So, it would have been worse, but she just was totally like if you looked up the definition of like what an Al-Anon person is, it was my mother. My thing too, like when I was dealing with all the anger towards my parents, is like my dad was just an asshole, like creepy alcoholic guy, but it was my mom that I had more issues with, because I'm like, you're the one that made excuses for him, that stayed with him, that like kept me and my brother in an environment that was unsafe just because you felt like it was better than the household you grew up in, because she had an alcoholic dad too. And she was like, oh, like you think this is bad, well, let me tell you what's bad was my dad. And it was like just this whole weird competition my whole life, and I was like, you know, and then I felt like I couldn't really own like the shit that happened, because I was like, oh well, that really wasn't that bad, but I knew it was deep down, like it was really messed up. So then I go to college, and I feel like I can finally breathe. I feel like I made it. I feel like this is what I've been working for, and that's part of what I've been having a hard issue and or like what led up to me getting sober too, was like after college I just did not know what to do, because like that was the light at the end of the tunnel for basically my whole life. So I get to college and I have no curfew, I can drink whenever. It was overwhelming to me, and that was when I realized not everyone had the same kind of homes that I did, when I realized that people didn't feel about their families the way I felt about my parents. And it was really eye-opening, and that was like crazy. And then I started doing, like, people at the school I went to, there's, like, this big drug scene. And the way that everyone smoked pot wasn't, like, my deadbeat dad kind of way. It was, like, an intellectual thing with, like, neuroscientist majors. And, like, it felt, they were the smartest people I ever met at the school, smoking the most weed I've ever seen. And I was like, oh, my God, like, this is cool. And, I started smoking weed, and that was it for me. That was, like, I feel like that, even still, that's, like, the hardest thing for me to give up, because that was, like, how I coped with my anxiety and depression. But I can't lie. It's, like, sometimes I did get more anxious. Like, it didn't always help with the anxiety. It made me paranoid. Like, and that's part of what I have to remind myself about staying sober, too, is, like, I feel like I'm one of those people where it would bring out, like, my extra crazy. Like, not just my crazy, but, like, if I have schizophrenia and I keep smoking weed, like, it's going to come out. Or, like, even if I didn't have schizophrenia, like, it's going to give me something. Because I would have those kind of freakouts. Like, I couldn't handle my shit all the time when I was... I would learn to, though. I remember, like, my first semester freshman year, a month had gone by, and I'm with my best girlfriend, who also went to all-girls school for 13 years in Manhattan, and we had bonded over that, and we were like, oh, my God, it's been 30 days, we've smoked weed every day, we're potheads. And that had always been, like, a goal of mine. Like, I was seeing a guy who was smoking weed, and he would just be able to, like, write a paper after, and I'd be like, oh my God, how do you do that? Like, you're stoned, and you're, like, doing stuff, and that was, like, my goal, was to be, like, stoned and functioning, because I was like, if I could be high all the time, that would be, why wouldn't you be? Which basically, like, that's a lot how a lot of my family feels, like, it's a story about me. Yeah, I went through college. Around my sophomore year, my friends and I were getting into, like, research chemicals and hallucinogenics and all of those types of things, which it was very, like, insidious, because these were my best friends. I would hang out with them at home, too, and then, like, we're in, you know, my friend's dorm room, and he's, like, taking stuff out that he got from the dark net, and, like, we're testing everything ourselves, and, like, measuring it out, and, like, weighing it, and, like, packing our own pills, and it just felt very safe. But it's, like, these are hard drugs that we're doing now. Like, he would do them, like, every weekend, and I'd be like, you've gone overboard. But, like, I would do them, like, every other weekend and be like, I'm just experimenting. And I still, you know, I don't know, like, the drinking was the most thing that I had consequences with. Just, like, to speed it up. But, so, like, I make it through college. I never really went overboard. Like I told you guys, like, school was very much a priority to me. Like, I knew why I was there at the end of the day. I wanted to have fun. Like, I did not want it to be a repeat of high school. Like, I wanted to have a social life. Which I did not have before. Like, I really felt like I was owed to have, like, fun time for myself. But I also knew I had to graduate on time. I had to do my classes. Like, nothing was going to, you know, get in my way. Like, I was still focused. So I got through school. I come back home, and I didn't know what I was doing. I was back home at my parents' house. I was very angry. I have no privacy there. It's a one-bedroom apartment. I'm sharing the living room with my brother. I can't change clothes without, like, someone walking. It's just, I felt insane. It wasn't ideal growing up. And then what started happening is, like, oh, with the drugs that I had used from, like, sophomore year, I was, like, tripping, and I started to remember, like, deep childhood buried stuff that wasn't just, like, your average, like, abusive stuff. It was, like, fucked. And it took me, I remembered some of it after I was tripping, and I was like, that, I don't know if that could be, but, like, deep down I knew just from, like, my behavior. Like, I was, like, and you know from, like, reading stuff, and, like, you know, people who have certain things have certain characteristics, and it's just, like, you know, it explained why I was some of the way that I was. And I remember I spent, like, a week, like, do I tell my mom? Like, what do I do? I end up calling my mom. I was totally suicidal. I told my mom, and she was like, we have to protect the family. She was like, that only happened once, you know, like, covering. And that was the worst. And I never thought my mom and I would be able to salvage our relationship, really. And then when I moved back home, they were telling me, my parents were basically telling me, you're crazy. Like, this stuff is, like, where are you coming up with this stuff? And I realized, like, because it's so bad where I'm like, you know, maybe I like to give it the benefit of the doubt. And then it's like, maybe I am making it up. In which case, I'm really fucked. Like, I must be, like, extra sick that I would dream up this kind of thing. And, like, I'm pretty sure, you know. So that, I really started not being able to, this is what led up to me getting sober. I had graduated, did not know what I was going to do next. I was being told that, like, my memories weren't real, and I started questioning my perception on reality, and I really started to begin to feel like I was unraveling. Like, I was like, what can I trust if I can't even trust my own... I realized my mom's been thinking for me for basically my whole life, and I love my mom, but we're totally codependent. And I was like, I need to start, like, making decisions for my own, and she's not agreeing with everything that I want to do. I wanted to have a relationship with my sisters from my dad's first marriage, and it took her basically a year to come to terms with that and, like, not be threatened with that. But that was part of me, owning my truth, like, and feeling whole. And they're in the program, too, and it's been amazing for me. I can have a 10-minute warning and a 5-minute warning. I'm going about stuff, but I'm, like, barely holding on. I had started to feel like a cracked egg, and I'm just functioning, and I'm doing everything. And I thought I was okay, and I thought I was even having fun. And I look back on that summer, and I'm like, it wasn't so bad. I was so skinny, and it looked great. Like, it wasn't, that's my parents tell me is, like, my denial talking. And then, the trust, it's like a fracture in my perception of reality, and then it just starts getting worse. I was seeing a therapist also that at the time that wasn't that great, that was telling me stuff like, I need to totally distance myself from my family, they're not healthy. But, like, my family is also all I know, and in some ways they're, like, the most support that I have, even as fucked as they are. So it's like I need to kind of, like, slowly, like, I really, what I needed to do was boundary setting and learning how to live with them in my life, but just with boundaries, which was a whole new concept too. So then what happens is one night, March 20th, which I count because even though that's not my true sobriety date because I was still smoking weed, and then I took this unprescribed Ritalin on September 11th, I count it because there's a 6-month difference, and I felt like I was cheated time, and because March 20th, 2015 was really when I decided I had to change my life. It was because I went out drinking, and I don't remember anything else, basically. I drank a whole bottle of wine before meeting up with my friends, and I had a Canada Goose jacket that got stolen. I had to watch security tapes at the bar of them escorting me out to prove that I wasn't wearing the jacket when I left, that I had left it in coat check, and it was their responsibility. And seeing the security tapes of me, like, falling and being escorted out, I've never drank again. I mean, that was really not cute. That was not a good look. I was. They couldn't believe me too, and that we had to go and sit through this and show them because they don't want to be responsible for, like, this jacket that I had to beg my parents for. It was, like, the most expensive thing I've ever owned still to this day. Like, my apartment is the other thing that's more expensive than this jacket that I have, right? It's the first new jacket I had since 8th grade for my winter jacket. I loved this fucking jacket. You see everyone wearing them in the winter, too, and now I'm like, these fucking schmucks. And I feel like I don't miss the jacket now, all right? But this was, and it sounds really trivial, but this was part of why I was like, oh, my God, like, I'm not responsible for my shit. Like, this was what got me. I woke up the next day before I went to the security tapes. I woke up the next day really bruised up just from falling. And I didn't know, maybe I had been hit by a car. It was like a thought that I had because I was just like that all beat up in my body. I've never seen my body like that messed up. And I didn't remember how I got home. I had my friend's jacket. I didn't have my phone or my wallet or my keys. I got my wallet back. I usually got stuff back when I lost it, which that's because I was on a campus in my college, which I don't, if you're in New York City, you don't get stuff back. And like that's besides the point. So my mom came over. I woke up that day though too, and I was like scared for my life. Because I had always wanted to die, and I had pretty much like planned on killing myself ever since I was like 13, and like telling myself, okay, I'll kill myself at 16, and then at 16 being like, if it doesn't get better when I'm 18, and like giving myself deadlines that I would have a lot of relief from. And now when it felt like I was like, I could have killed myself, I was scared. I was like, oh my God, like I'm gonna lose, it's just nothing, I'm gonna lose stuff. So my parents were like, great, finally, like, why don't you go to rehab? They've been like waiting for this moment. And I went to an outpatient rehab for like a year and a half. That was amazing. It was a lot of group therapy. And like, I liked the family addiction groups a lot, especially. And I really liked group therapy. It was really working for me because at that point, going to therapists and talking one-on-one with like a professional and having them make me feel like I'm being heard and acknowledged and recognized, but then basically not really having, you know, that wasn't working for me after a point. But then going and sitting with a group of people who have been through the shit that I've been through, or are worse or not as bad, and still feel the same way I feel, and how they cope with it, and like hearing it from other people, which is what the program gives you too. Like, and that's how it is different. And that started really, you know, working for me. And I had been going to Al-Anon for a while. Thank you. And because I had really lost a lot of friends at that point, I just didn't know how to have relationships or friendship, any kind of relationship. It was like kind of baffling to me. And Al-Anon I liked because I was like, okay, my dad's the alcoholic. I can go for the issues I have from growing up with that, but I can probably still drink for a while. And then I started, AA was the last resort because I don't feel like people want to end up here. It's like a pretty big deal. Like, you don't come here because your life is great. You know, I came here, I didn't want to, and it's gotten a lot better. But it's hard because, you know, it gets better, but then you're not happy all the time still in sobriety. Like, I've gone through really hard things in sobriety, like my apartment going, you know, with the fire I had in October, with the building next door, having to move out of my favorite apartment that I've ever had, only lived there for 8 months, but it was like I had a 2-year lease. It was my future. It symbolized basically my future and independence and everything. I had to go through getting a new job and then losing that job. And the difference today is that, like, I have a whole support network, like really a network, which I didn't have before. And they remind me. And even today, with friends that I don't have in the program, I've just chosen to surround myself by better people. Like, I'm talking to someone today who's still at the job I was at, and he hates it there. And he's still glad, you know, he needs the money, and he's telling me, like, Lauren, we're better than this. Like, trust me. Like, we're better than this place. And I'm like, you know, that's great to hear. And then I'm talking to my other friend who got let go with me, and he's saying, you just need to stay positive and have confidence. And I'm like, you know me, and I have low self-esteem. So, and he was like, Lauren, you know, if you could just see the faith I had in you as being your coworker, and what a badass employee you are, and that it was nothing bad, you know, nothing that you did, just that you had a bad mentor. And I'm like crying because he's like, he means this. Like, he's not saying this to me just to, you know, make me feel better. And that's about friends in the program too, is the same, because they'll tell you the truth and they'll tell you things to make you feel better, but they'll also tell you the truth, which is harder to hear. And it's sometimes harder to tell a friend the truth. Too, but even, you know, they're there for both, and they're there for just fun. And I've met my family in the program after I had like 90 days, and I was going back to this Al-Anon group. I actually met my other half sister, who I hadn't met before, but she's been sober 8 years, and we have a relationship today. Even though they still don't talk to my dad, my relationship with my parents is the best it's been ever, and I count on them, and they count on me too, and we're all there for each other in a way that I really would not have believed if you had said this to me, like, you know, 3 years ago, even, like, this is, you're gonna like your family. I would have been like, you're so crazy. So that's been amazing. And then even knowing my half sisters was such a huge deal, having the friends. It's nice. You don't feel alone in the program too, and it took me a long time, and I still do get that way, but you know it's not true, and you know, like, you have different tools. Stuff I would say to newcomers is get a service commitment, because that just forces you to interact with people. And if you're like me, like, I thought I had to have a certain amount of time before people would like take me seriously as like a friend or something. I was like, how can I really be, like, trying to talk to program people when I'm, like, counting days? I don't recommend this at all. I think, like, you should just try to make friends. But, like, I had a weird thing where I was like, I don't know how to talk to people. And it took me, like, a year to, like, have friends. And part of that is just from, like, doing the coffee commitment and having to talk to the same people every week just for, like, coffee logistics. And then you end up asking each other about each other, and then it's a friendship. And then they ask you to go to fellowship, and I was weird about that for a while, too. It's like, ew, like, I come to the meetings. Like, that's enough social interaction. Like, I hear people talk. Like, sometimes I talk. Like, that's a lot. And I was like, I want to go home. Like, I have to go home and be miserable and just sit there. I was like, you don't understand. And then the thing is, like, the same people will ask you week after week, like, do you want to come to fellowship? And I wasn't scared that I, like, wasn't going to have someone to sit with. And I ended up going, and, you know, you have to do some bullshit things. Like, you just kind of have to show up places, be on time, and keep commitments, and, you know, the steps aren't that fun, but you do the things, and there is relief. I can guarantee that you know, there's, you feel better most of the time. Yeah, and it's unreal. I don't know what my life would be like today if I didn't have the program. It keeps my structure and it keeps me sane when I have like feel like I've lost everything. Like because before I really felt like I had nothing and no one and I wanted to die. And sometimes I still feel like I have nothing, but I know I don't have no one. And I know other people feel like I do. And you'll be surprised by the support that you get and the support that you give. Like sometimes you don't realize how you've internalized something until like before I can do things for myself or about like dating or stuff, like I'll tell my girlfriends, you don't let someone treat you like that. And like, you know, then it's like, how can you let yourself go through something you wouldn't let your friend go through? And then you have to have these people before. It's not like an abstract thing. It's like a person. I would not ever want my friend to go through what I've been through, and then you can't put yourself through it. Sorry, that doesn't make sense. Okay, hopefully that makes sense. Okay, yeah, so thanks for letting me speak. I'm excited to hear all of you, and that's all.